You might think Grammarly is a fancy spell check, but your team has been using and loving it for years because it does way more than you realize. Grammarly's AI can write an instant first draft in a few clicks, not a few hours. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Grammarly, easier said, done.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Masters in Business with Barry Ritholtz on Bloomberg Radio.
This week on the podcast, I have an extra special guest. If you want to listen to me wonk out about automobiles, Hannah Elliott is my favorite automobile reviewer. The last time I had her on, I had people writing me and saying, you know, you were like a little puppy dog piddling all over yourself. You couldn't get out of your own way. You were so excited to talk about cars with somebody. This time, I think I let Hannah speak a little more than I did last time. I tried to keep my excitement in check, especially on the broadcast portion. But we did go back and forth on some stuff. If you were at all interested in the automobile industry, EVs, motorcycles, collectible cars, Ferraris, Formula One, well, strap yourself in and get ready. This is 2 hours of automobile wonkery. With no further ado, my conversation with Bloomberg's Hannah Elliott. Hannah Elliott, welcome back.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
I always enjoy talking to you because I'm kind of a car guy. And before we get into automobiles, let's just start a little bit with a background of your career. You were a staff writer at Forbes Luxury. What led you to being a writer and what led you to luxury?
It's a really funny story. I always start out by saying, of course, at Bloomberg, I get to write about cars. I get to write about the fun thing. Most people here write about how to make money. I get to write about how to spend money.
It, right.
This was not by design. This was not my plan. I did love words and books, and I did study journalism in college. I went to Baylor University.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking of Brittany Griner right now. She also went to Baylor, so shout out Brittany. But I went to Baylor. I got a journalism degree and moved to New York. I had interned writing about politics and religion, actually, but saw on Craigslist an ad to assist the automotive editor at Forbes. And I knew nothing about cars. I come from a sports family. I'm not a car. I still say I'm not actually a car person. This is my job. It's a beat.
Did you play sports in college?
Yeah, I ran track. Yep,
okay.
I was
going to guess volleyball because
yes.
You're 6'1".
A lot of people say basketball. But
no, you're short for basketball, but you're the right height for beach volleyball.
I got some cousins who are very good at volleyball.
Yeah.
They played at SMU. But I was a runner. My dad ran for Nike in the 80s.
Oh, really?
Marathon distance.
Huh.
So I come from a big running family. My brother played basketball, actually, in Europe professionally. So big sports family. No car.
Really?
Anything. I mean, I did know how to drive a stick shift because my dad taught me in his old Ford when I was 16, mostly because I bugged him just to do it. But I had an uncle with like an Acura Legend, which was probably the nicest car I was ever exposed to.
Wow.
And just shared an old Buick Skylark with my sister in high school that I was very embarrassed by. So not
understandably.
Although my sister actually, I think she kind of liked it, but not interested in cars at all. But back to this Craigslist ad, I figured, well, Forbes is a good brand. It's
sure.
Recognizable. I know I want to do journalism. There's my foot in the door. I'll figure it out once I get in. And fast forward, you know, this was in like 2007, 2008. A lot of people got laid off in the industry. My editor, who I'd been working with for a year and a half or so, got laid off. He was expensive. I wasn't.
You were cheap, being
paid
right.
Next to nothing. So it was like, well, who can write about cars and, you know, pick this up? Because we just fired the guy who was covering him, which doesn't make sense.
Right.
And so, Elliot, you go. Matthew DePaola, I will always be so grateful to him. He was the editor at Forbes at the time who hired me and really for a year and a half took me around everywhere and just taught me the beat. That's how I approached it. This is a beat. I'm going to approach this just like anything else. There are no wrong questions. It's just like this is the way that I would cover anything. And I always kind of thought, well, I'll eventually go into other things. And I did certainly do luxury and watch coverage at Forbes and celebrity coverage. You know, I got to talk to everyone from Jennifer Lopez to a cover story on Elon Musk back in the day before anyone really knew about him,
right,
which is crazy to think about now. You know, Forbes was great. And it just kind of was like cars were the thing that I did because no one else at Forbes was doing them. And then I just never stopped. And you know,
what was the first car you reviewed at Forbes?
That's a great question. The first car I remember being allowed to drive as a Forbes staffer was probably an Aventador, a Lamborghini Aventador.
Oh, really? So you're not
fooling
around.
Which I was terrified.
Like, that's where
by.
You start.
Yeah. That
here,
I was terrified.
Here's a $500,000 car. Have some fun.
Yes. I remember Matthew was in the passenger seat, so I wasn't completely solo.
Matthew
DePaola, who was the editor who hired me there, he was still around. And I mean, I was terrified. But also, I was young and dumb enough not to know any better.
Right.
And I think that actually really served me. I didn't know what I was supposed to do or not do. I just approached it like a journalist.
Right.
Which I was, you know, I still am really proud to be a journalist. I think it's the best job. And cars are way more fascinating now even than then. I mean, that was, you know, 12, 15 years ago. And even now, like, the car industry is the most exciting industry.
It's crazy. It really is. Yeah. So I was telling a friend that I was going to speak with you again and talk about cars. And their response was, you know, I love pizza, but if I had to make pizza for a living, I would hate pizza.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the same? Is there still a thrill here? Or are you like, you know, no longer can smell the roses?
That's a really good question. I think it actually works to my benefit that I never was a car person anyway. I'm not a car person. And I always say, here's the difference.
Yeah, because I think you become a car person whether or not you wanted to.
Well, I can certainly speak the language if I need to, and I feel very comfortable in those circles. But here's the difference. I don't go to car things that I'm not basically paid to be there. And everyone else at the car event, I mean, whether it's a Formula E race or, a Concours, I'm paid to be there. Yes, it's enjoyable. Yes, it's glamorous and fun, and I really do enjoy it. But I don't go to car things on my own personal time. I play with my dog, you know, or go buy a flower or something else. Because, yeah, I just think, like your pizza friend, it would be too much, and
I mean, if you're doing it for a living at a certain point, it's change, even if you love what you're doing. Hey, I love the markets and finance, but on the weekends, I want to go out in the boat or sit on the beach or just something.
And
chill out.
I really say, look, if your car is the most interesting thing about you, you're probably a little bit boring. I like to be around people who have a lot of dimensions, and a cool car is one of them, and that's awesome.
Right.
But to me, that should not be the most interesting thing about you. I love car people. I love talking about cars, but like, come on, you got to have some depth too. So that might be a little, not trying to put anyone down, but to me, it's like, if I'm going to spend social time with you, you got to be able to talk about more than.
Right. And that's right. You send your angry emails to helliott@bloomberg.net.
Yes.
So what sort of automotive trends are catching your eye these days? What do you like? What don't you like?
Well, I think EV, like electric mobility, for lack of a better word, is despite the fact that we're still, you know, hovering around 5% penetration of EVs.
So is it 5% of new sales? That's all it is?
Of all cars on the road.
Oh, well, but cars last 15, 20 years these days. So it's going to be,
it's
going to take a long time.
Yeah, so it's like one thing to talk about the hype of EVs. Certainly at every car show and every car launch and every debut, it's all electric vehicles. But in real terms, in the real world, I think we can expect to see SUVs that continue to get more and more expensive.
But what about the Aston Martin SUV and
completely.
The Bentley and the Rolls?
And the Rolls, and you know, Porsche's got a couple SUVs that are going to get close to 200,000 if you get every. But I don't think, you know, I remember when the first SUVs were really starting to get over $100,000, it was like, wow, this is really crazy. This is a utility vehicle, but it's being priced like electric car. But now it's just on top of that. I mean, Lamborghini, Ferrari's coming out with theirs. It's just going to continue, and there seems to be no limit. And let's not forget, SUVs have the biggest margins. They're basically doubling the production volumes for a lot of these smaller automakers like Lamborghini and Ferrari. So they're going to double production volume, and then the profits are just massive.
Look, back when Porsche was independent, the Cayenne saved the company.
Completely. And also, it's so interesting because back, you know, the people who are very into these sports brands like Porsche, Ferrari, Lamborghini, there's so much philosophical angst about, well, but we're really a sports car company. We're really a, you know, a supercar company. What is our consumer going to think when we go into an SUV? No one cares.
Right.
No one cares. I mean, there was all this like polite, oh, what will we do? No one will accept our DNA as a true sports car company anymore. Nobody cares.
Half the people I know who own 911s have,
of course,
either a Macan or a Cayenne in the garage, because they stay with the brand. And the only problem with those SUVs, so I had a Macan S, you just go through tires and brakes like they're, because it's a big, heavy truck, but you can throw it around like it's a sports car. And eventually it's like, oh, I got 12,000 miles. I got no rubbers. And I need to replace the brake pads. But it drives like a sports car.
And those have done nothing to diminish the allure of a 911. It's
other than funding them, letting them spend money.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like, oh, if we make an SUV, now people won't take our sports car seriously. It just, it elevates everything.
Right, 100%.
Yeah, and I think that will really continue. I mean, if you look even if you look at the 992, the new 911, compared to, you know, call it a turbo from the 70s.
Double the size. Right.
So,
in fact, somebody did, the Porsche, not the Boxster, the hardtop, the Cayman.
Uh-huh.
A new Cayman today is the size of a 70s 911.
Yeah.
It's just shocking. All right, so that's what trends you like. What bugs you? What's the trend that you find, oh, I wish this would stop, this is terrible?
Well, honestly, the flip side of the coin is the whole idea that when you are creating electric vehicles, they tend to be appliances.
Yeah.
I find that so boring and unfortunate. I don't know what that means for the future, but my number one thing is cars should be fun. Even if it's a commuter car, it should still be fun. And I do think there is a place for autonomous driving, you know, for commuting, sure.
Especially if you can set your cruise control so that it starts and stops. Like in LA, you're on the 405.
Yes.
Who wants to be stressed about?
That's not driving. That's just commuting.
Right.
It's a completely
different
thing. So I do think there is a place for it. But it is kind of sad to see how consumers who have been marketed to believe that they are going to be virtuous by purchasing an EV, and they're going to symbol their, you know, virtuous status by driving an electric vehicle, that they're somehow doing good for the environment. This is a little bit of a separate point, but to me, the best thing you could do for an environment is to not buy a new car. Use a car that already exists. Use an old car.
Interesting.
And this goes hand in hand with the appliance thing. You know, I just drove the Cadillac Lyriq.
Which you didn't exactly love.
I didn't necessarily love it because, for many reasons, but to this particular point, it's just kind of like an appliance.
Right.
It looks interesting. The looks are there. But driving, it could have been from any brand. And I'm not sure. Cadillac used to really mean something.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that's going to have the same pull as the Cadillacs of yesterday.
Right, and especially without the fins. What if everyone at work were an expert communicator? What if every doc, message, and email they wrote was perfectly clear and concise? Inbox numbers would drop, customer satisfaction scores would rise, and everyone would be more productive. That's where Grammarly comes in. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that understands your business and can transform it through better communication. Companies that use Grammarly save an average of 19 days per employee per year. That's because with Grammarly's AI, what used to take a few hours only takes a few clicks, like generating an instant first draft in your company voice or tailoring a message to your specific audience and goals. And Grammarly's personalized on-brand writing help is built in everywhere your team works, across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, it's safe, secure, and already IT approved. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly with their words and their data. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Grammarly, easier said, done.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest-growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle-market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Just P.S., what really bugs me that I have to share, and I've been in a bunch of EVs, there is just no reason to bury the the heating and air conditioning controls
Layers,
three levels.
And
I know you can't expect a Volkswagen to be a Bugatti, even though they're the same ownership, but I just was watching a review of the Chiron, and they brilliantly integrated just three buttons across all of your heating, cooling, fan, heated and cooled seats. Just three little buttons.
Yes.
You can push it in, you can pull it out, or you could just turn the knob. And, you know, we have to pull that stuff. I know a lot of companies like to keep them at the bottom of the screen.
Yes.
It's still a pain in the neck.
Yeah, and I have mixed feelings about this. For instance, the new Mercedes cars, like the S-Class and the EQ, have this very
giant
screen that's curved, and it goes across the entire dashboard, and it's actually very beautiful. And it is pretty well designed.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually did find it was intuitive, and I purposely don't ask for help when I first get into a car. I
want
to be able
to
see if I can figure it out. I don't want them to show me, because that to me is a little bit more of a controlled environment to see if it's intuitive. So I don't have a problem with that necessarily, but in general, I do like some tangible knobs and buttons.
Hard buttons.
Yes, and if you are having to scroll through multiple layers of software to turn on a seat heater, that's distracting and annoying
while you're driving.
Meanwhile,
the flip side of that is all of the new Ferrari steering wheels. It's like you don't need anything else. Everything's at your thumbs.
Did you get in the Roma, the Ferrari?
Did. I don't love the interior.
What?
I find the exterior of that car just silky, sexy, gorgeous.
Yes.
And the interior is a little disappointing.
From the accoutrement or the technology?
Just a little bit of both. I mean, it's, you know, not everything is a 488 or, you know, I've kind of been looking at the F12 lately because the A12s have gone postal.
Uh-huh.
And pre-pandemic, the F12 was just starting to come down in price. And for any three of my cars, I'm like, well, you know, I could save a little maintenance and insurance if I swap these three for that one.
Quality over quantity.
And it was definitely coming. I love paying half of MSRP for a three-year-old car that still has most of its useful life ahead of it. And then it just, you know, they're up 40-50% from where I was like, oh, you're $10,000 away from where I could think about this.
Yeah.
So that's a beautiful interior with hard buttons and a screen and a separate little screen if you buy the upgrade for the passenger.
You didn't love it.
The Roma.
Yeah.
So the A12 and the F12 are both just, I like that environment. The Roma was just kind of, it was a little too minimalist.
And interesting.
I kind of really like the dials, the buttons, the tack. Like, I want to feel, when I get into a Ferrari, I want to feel like I'm
cockpit.
in a fighter plane. What else looks really new and interesting to you? What cars or SUVs are you excited about, even if they're not out till 23 or 24? All right, not the Lyric, hold that off.
Okay.
What else?
This is going to surprise you, but I really did like the Hummer EV.
Everybody I know who's driven it says it's spectacular.
It's good. This is a
immense
vehicle,
but spectacular.
Yes, at 9,000 plus pounds.
Wow.
And you're going to be on the same level as a school bus, basically, height-wise. Again, if you love the Hummer, you're going to love it. If you hate the Hummer, you're going to hate it.
Right.
But what I love about it is it's not trying to be anything it isn't. This is a very obnoxious vehicle, you know, but it's not trying to hide it. It has a point of view,
but it's electric.
Pop you in the nose,
right.
But it's electric and it's really fast. I drove that
insane 9,000 pounds really fast
with launch mode, which also is ridiculous. There's no reason a Hummer EV needs to have a launch mode, and I'm telling you, it pushes you back in your seat. It's crazy.
And well, you've seen the YouTube videos of the people in the Tesla Plaid.
Sure.
Just like having their minds blown.
Yeah. Well, imagine that in like something the size of a school bus, basically.
Wow.
It's crazy. But I loved it. They did a good job with it. I think, you know, good luck trying to get one. And I saw they were those
200 plus
on Bring a Trailer.
Right.
Already. Did you see the one that sold on Bring a Trailer for, I think it was around $200,000?
Yeah. There's been several that have been going for 200 plus.
So, I mean, it's crazy, but I really did like it. Surprisingly, I thought they did a great job of incorporating the look of the old Hummer. I mean, the minute you look at it, you know it's a Hummer.
It's clearly a Hummer.
But it does look updated, too. Mm-hmm. I thought they did a better job than maybe, I don't know, a Defender. You know how they brought the new Defender in?
Yeah, but the new Defender has been slagged by a lot of people.
Yeah.
The folks I know who own it all love it.
Yeah.
I mean, the only beef anyone has is it's a Range Rover, so...
Yeah.
Reliability is
not
their
forte.
Yeah, I was
just going to say that it might be in the shop every now and then.
And by the way, it's really interesting given the lack of availability of new cars and used cars. Go on any used car site and look for like a 2021 Range Rover Sport HSE, which is an expensive car.
Mm-hmm.
There are tons of them available.
Yes.
And it's mostly because the reliability downgrades their appeal as a used car. But
yes.
I was interested in, you mentioned the Defender. So I know someone in the UK who has the Defender as a hybrid and says he gets 40, 50 miles
Amazing.
A gallon because I think it was 45 miles local. So all your
That's
local
great.
Driving is EV. But if you want to go from London to take the Channel to Paris, you can tank up and you could make that trip.
Yeah. I love that. And I think, you know, I am neither for nor against EVs. I do feel genuinely neutral about them. I think, okay, they're probably going to happen. Great. But it is true that, like, now that I'm living in Los Angeles, I can't drive to Vegas in an EV without stopping for a considerable amount of time.
Yeah.
I mean, more than that.
To
try to get a recharge. Yeah, I mean, realistically, you can't drive up to San Francisco in an EV. The hybrid solves that problem.
Right, that's right.
Yeah, and you'll still have decent efficiencies. So.
And the same thing with the Range Rover, that HSE Sport, the new version, which looks lovely, is also available in a hybrid in the UK. I don't think it's here, but what's the giant Range Rover? Is it the Land Rover?
Yeah.
That is here with a hybrid. So you get arguably the best of both worlds. You're not a fan of the Defender? The new Defender's looks?
I think they could have done a little better. Like the rear box, you know how in the rear three quarters, there's a box there. It's a step. Now, that blocks a lot of vision when you're driving it.
I have an X4, so I know all about that blind spot back there.
I don't think it's bad. I just think they could have done a little bit better. I don't know. To me, it just, like, I think Bronco, you know how they brought the Bronco
spectacular.
Back, looks amazing.
What a great job.
Just had the Raptor. Oh, my God. Wow.
Have you driven the F-150 Lightning yet?
No, I haven't.
I had it for a week.
Okay, thoughts?
Amazing. First of all, if you're not a pickup guy or girl, right, it's immense, and it's, you know, almost to the inch exactly what the internal combustion version is.
Okay.
So it's immense. But by the way, the Bronco, I had the Bronco for a week also. And so I have an old Jeep Rubicon, and the interesting thing about the shape of the Jeep is it's a great glass greenhouse, you can see everything.
Yeah.
And the way the fenders are set off of the hood, you could see your corners. The Bronco is a giant rectangle, and you can't see anything. I mean, your greenhouse is clean. Yeah. You could see out the back, and they have great cameras, but you're completely blind what's in front of the truck for like 10 feet. Other than that, it was a blast. We took it on the beach. We went off-roading.
Are you converted?
What, into?
From Jeep to Bronco.
No, because the Jeep, I have a 2013 Rubicon, and it just goes anywhere. And I'm not like a crazy Jeep guy, but my house is set up on a hill, and four-wheel drive cars in the rain have a hard time getting up there. So the snow is impossible, and the Jeep just, it just laughs at everything. It's like, foot of snow, 40-degree angle.
That's great.
No issues. If I was looking to replace that, I would consider the Bronco. Mm-hmm. Two of my neighbors have one. They both love it.
Yeah.
One has the convertible and the other one has a four-door. And, you know, I had it for a week. I thought it was a blast. It seems unstoppable. The F-150 was just a wholly different experience.
Let me ask you about that. You said it was amazing. Amazing for a Ford F-150 truck or amazing for an EV?
So I've never had any SUV.
Okay.
And I've driven EVs, but not, I mean, pickup. I've never had a pickup. And I've driven EVs, but I haven't really had them for a week or so. So the first thing I learned is, and I wrote a long review on it, I plugged it in and it lights up, and the next morning I come out and there's no change. Oh, it lights up orange. I have to really put this in. So now it's lighting up blue. And then on a 120 without a special charger, you're adding like 2 miles an hour.
A trickle.
Yeah, it's a trickle. And then what was interesting, we went to the beach and there are all these...
The fast chargers.
Yeah, well, they're semi-fast chargers. And so we're at the beach for 2 hours and it cost me $6.49 to add 48 miles. So kind of like $3 a gallon. It seems pretty cheap. It's like the Hummer. It's stupid fast for its size and weight. It's just stupid. And it's a full pickup bed. So I dragged out to the beach house. I dragged. You ever see the Roman arch for hammocks? I had one taken apart. It's like 16 feet.
Okay.
I threw that in the back. I threw a 6-foot table I had taken apart. I threw a big 4-burner Weber. I just loaded up with stuff. And I'm like,
that's great.
I got a ton more room back here.
Yeah.
So anybody who's using stuff, I appreciate having a pickup, but to me, it's like the SUVs. So I have an X4, similar to the X6 or the GLE, that rounded back, and friends tell me, look how much space you're giving up. I'm like, twice a year, I fill the back of the truck all the way up.
Sure.
The other 360 days, I have to look at an ugly rectangle.
Yeah.
I'd rather have something that's a little sexier. And if I really need to, I'll either make 2 trips or take 2 cars or rent a truck if that's what I really need.
Yeah.
But some people are just can't wrap their head around.
Yeah.
Does the look of a car matter to you relative to its utility? And if it's not your only car, hey, listen, if I had one car, then okay, maybe. I got too many cars. So to me, it's not...
You got a space issue.
We were discussing building a garage.
See, this is so how it's you, you're crossing over into danger territory.
A friend said to me, one tattoo is either too few or too many.
Yeah.
It's like...
That's a very good point.
And so I'm at the point where 6 cars... are either too few, well, actually 5. I totaled my wife's Panamera.
Oh. Are you okay?
Everybody's fine. Okay. This was December, January, February, something like that. 5 miles an hour.
No.
I slow down to make a left, and the person behind me thought I was pulling over.
Yeah.
Crossed a double yellow, and you look in your rearview mirror, in a truck.
Oh God.
There's no one behind me, so I make the left, and she T-boned us, and a Panamera 4S. It was 6 months old.
Oh.
And the funny thing was I got $24,000 more than I paid for the car.
Perfect.
Because the market prices had gone up so insane. So other than chipping my tooth and being sore for a week, it happened right in front of my dentist's building. So when I called and said, hey, I chipped a tooth in a car accident, can I come in tomorrow? Yeah. She's like, that wasn't you in front of our building, was it? I'm like,
she
that was.
She saw it.
They heard it. They heard kaboom.
Gosh. Yeah.
And the crazy thing is the woman who was driving the Lexus truck that hit us, She went to the hospital. She was fine. Turned out she was fine.
Okay.
She was just nervous and whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But was scared and shaken up.
It's scary.
But my wife and I were like black and blue for
it. It's scary.
Car accidents are no fun.
Yeah. Scary.
But, you know, the Panamera did what it was supposed to.
Yeah, good.
All the airbags came down.
Good.
The only weird thing is, as it's happening, I'm like trying to recover the skid and I can't. Your brain can't figure out what's going on because nothing's operating. You can't see.
Yeah.
Like you're blinded.
Yeah.
The steering wheel doesn't respond. So when we stopped moving, I went to open the driver door and I couldn't open the door. And I'm like, something's wrong with the door. And I turned to my wife. I'm like, are you okay? There's something wrong with our door. And people came running over to the car. They opened her door and took her out. And so I had to climb over the seat to get out. And I was genuinely shocked to see a car T-boned.
That's scary.
Yeah, it's just, and I'm like a religious signaler.
Mm-hmm.
And so normally I would absolutely swear on a stack of Bibles that I signaled. But the fact that the person went to pass us makes me wonder, hey, was this the one time I made a left without signaling? How much of it is my fault? I don't think it was.
It's not your fault, Barry.
Well, normally, when you're making a left, the assumption is it's your fault.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, but they crossed the double yellow line. So I don't look, New York is a no-fault state. So it doesn't matter. But anyway, how do we get on this digression?
We were talking about trucks.
Oh, that's right. So
and space to keep your cars. You got six cars, but now you're
down to
five.
Well, now I got five. I'm down to five.
Are they all inside?
Three inside.
Okay.
The Jeep and the
so
Explorer outside.
So you were potentially looking at
I am. We are at six. Yeah. I got the FJ
okay.
also. What if everyone at work were an expert communicator? What if every doc, message, and email they wrote was perfectly clear and concise? Inbox numbers would drop, customer satisfaction scores would rise, and everyone would be more productive. That's where Grammarly comes in. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that understands your business and can transform it through better communication. Companies that use Grammarly save an average of 19 days per employee per year. That's because with Grammarly's AI, what used to take a few hours only takes a few clicks, like generating an instant first draft in your company voice, or tailoring a message to your specific audience and goals. And Grammarly's personalized on-brand writing help is built in everywhere your team works, across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, it's safe, secure, and already IT approved. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly with their words and their data. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Grammarly, easier said, done.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So, there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
So I have a 78 FJ, which I started rebuilding in...
What color?
Sky blue with a white roof and a black interior.
I think you sent me a picture of that.
I started rebuilding one in Columbia pre-pandemic. Then we went into lockdown and they said, listen, we can't hold on to the car. We have to, we're stuck. I'm like, go ahead, sell it. And we'll find another one when this is over. So long story short, 2021, rebuild a new one, import it to the U.S. in January. It sits in customs for 2 months because they're so backed up in Port of Miami. Finally get up here in like February, March. waiting for the last of the documentation to come in, which just came in like a week ago.
Cool.
I had to get a certified translation of the purchase agreement because you can't send them something showing 100 million pesos in Spanish. They don't want to hear that at DMV.
Yeah.
And so the car gets registered this week. So that's number
exciting.
Six.
Cool.
So seven is too many. So the trucks are outside, the cars are inside.
All right.
But at a certain point, it's, you know, you got to make a decision. Am I going to build a garage for all these things? And it's work keeping six cars.
Yes. This is a part-time job, just maintaining, making sure the registrations are current and making sure the batteries
insurance,
are all alive
right.
and the insurance. And
I put a trickle
old,
charger on the vet. So
okay.
That,
wait, what Corvette do you have?
67 Coupe. Spectacular.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. All these show up on the website.
I've been looking for a Corvette. I want a C3 white. They
so
didn't
this,
make very many
the
of them.
C3 is the Corvette of my youth.
Yeah.
Like when I was in high school, it was still 10 years before that.
Yeah.
But, you know, they were used cars. And
yeah.
Guys would buy a, you know, a 10-year-old Vet. And, like, I came very close to getting a 69 in yellow over black.
Ooh.
And the prices hadn't gone up. And I started seeing the C2s. And I'm like, these are just the most amazing looking
cars. I know.
Cars.
They're so cool.
They're just so gorgeous.
I just saw one. I follow this thing called Hobby Car Corvettes, and I just saw one.
Oh, really?
They've got a white one in my birth year
right.
for sale in Pennsylvania, and I really
white
thought,
over white or
white over red.
Okay.
C3 is an
That's
automatic.
That's my wife's old 2 Series.
Oh, that is so cool.
Don't get the automatic. You don't want to do that.
California traffic, though, I don't want to sit in LA.
So here's the one thing you have to know about the old vets.
Okay.
They're tractors.
Like, well, we know that.
I mean,
same with every old Lamborghini.
The clutch is heavy. The steering is heavy.
Yes, this
the
is
brakes.
Why I want an automatic.
I have drum brakes on this
minus,
my 67, which, by the way, is supposed to be the pinnacle of the C2.
How often do you drive it?
I try and rotate all the cars out on the road once a week.
Okay.
Although, you know, on a day like today when it's raining cats and dogs, it's not.
No.
It's not coming out of the garage.
But it is, to your point, it is a bit of a chore to maintain.
It's
work.
Six
cars.
Is too few or too many.
Yeah.
Either you need 20 and
a guy.
Right.
Yeah.
Or like four, you know, we each have a daily driver.
Yeah.
So when I was younger, we each had a daily driver and there would be a convertible in the garage. So had an old SL for a long time and then we had a Z4. So there was always a fun car that we could take out on weekends. And you know what? A third car, hey, you start it once a month, who cares?
Yeah, not a big
Six
deal.
Six cars, it's just, it starts to be work.
It's like cats, but for car guys.
Yeah.
Keep acquiring. You know, like the crazy cat lady, she just kind of keeps taking them in.
Right, that's what starts to happen.
Yeah.
And once you go beyond a couple of cars just for what you need, it's, well, what is the difference between having four extra cars and six extra cars?
Not a lot.
It's
volume
it's
of scale.
It's excessive, right.
Yeah.
Either way is excessive.
For sure, but
My partner thinks I'm insane. My partner's at work.
Yes.
Look at me and like, how many cars are you going to buy? And I'm like, I don't know.
Well, what about during this market? Wouldn't it be a bit smarter to put some cash into a car rather than... I mean, I have my own theories about that, and I've been talking to a lot of people about it.
Yeah.
But, you know, what I hear is...
At these elevated prices?
I'm talking collective old cars.
So,
old cars.
Okay, how old is old?
You know, something 20 years or older. The,
okay.
The vintage...
Well, the Vet is 50 years old, and the whatchamacallit...
And that's probably appreciated quite a bit.
It has, since I got that last summer.
Yes.
In the beginning of the pandemic, I kind of accidentally bought an R8. On Bring a Trailer.
Okay.
So I'm sitting outside reading a book, and my wife says, John from Salt Lake City on the phone. And, you know, I have bids out on cars and bids and Bring a Trailer, like 30-40% away from the market constantly. And, you know, my credit card company thinks I'm crazy because, you know, they put the hold.
Holding,
right.
Yeah.
And I pick, hi, can I help you? Congratulations on the car. And I'm like,
what?
Which car? And he said, the R8. I'm like, I won that? Really?
Yeah.
That's fantastic. I go, wait a second. Are you sure? I was way off the market. And as I say that, I'm like, oh, this isn't live to tape. You just stepped in it.
Yeah.
And he said, well, tell you the truth, He goes, did you have any idea what the reserve is? I'm like, no, how would I know that? He said, because 2 days ago, I spoke to bring a trailer, and they talked me into lowering the reserve. He goes, you just barely beat the reserve. And I'm like, why did you lower the price? He's like, well, I have a new Ferrari coming. I had to make room in the garage. Yeah. I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
So I'm like, listen, I've always been a fan of that car. I love the gated shifter.
Sure.
And I think the V10 is kind of cheating. As much fun as it is, the V8 in that is a monster. So everything was, he was a little miffed at me because this was April of 2020.
Mm-hmm.
It took me like 6 weeks to arrange insurance, register, and shipping because nobody was doing anything.
Yeah.
So I actually got an email from Bring a Trailer, which is like, hey, what's going on? I'm like, dude, nobody is shipping cars.
He was in Texas?
He was in Utah.
Oh, Utah.
And I was
like,
nobody's shipping cars. Yeah. I can't get my insurance company on the phone.
Yeah.
What am I going to do? Yeah. Trust me, I will wire the money in advance.
Yes.
I just need to straighten all this stuff out. Right.
Yeah.
If you need the cash, I'll send the money today.
Sure.
I just am.
Yeah.
So it was interesting because when the car arrived, I had all my paperwork. I had my insurance. Mm-hmm. I had my inspection, but DMV was closed. You couldn't register the car. So I would take the
auction. Oh, don't let that stop you.
I would take the auction paper. I'd have a whole file.
Yeah.
And I would go out each morning at 7 a.m. and there's nobody on the road.
Mm-hmm.
There's no joggers. There's no bicyclists. There's no other cars and there are no police. So my local side roads became a little autobahn for me.
Oh, that's great.
And that lasted about 2 months, 3 months.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I'm not an idiot. I when people, they're bicyclists or pedestrians or fun time is over.
Yeah.
It's 7 a.m. in the beginning of the pandemic.
There was a little sweet spot in there.
There was a huge
sweet
spot. You could
really get out on the road. I remember we drove once from Santa Monica and Los Angeles to downtown in about 12 minutes.
Right.
And we were not even speeding that much. It was just open
There's
road.
Nobody.
Usually that drive takes an hour at least.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
it was great.
So I had my like stack of papers.
Yeah. Just in
case. I was fully anticipating a conversation with the local constable saying.
Are you a booster by any chance?
Years ago, I used to do that.
Yeah.
I kind of stopped because it's a little, it's just a little dirty feeling sometimes.
Yep.
And I would rather charm my way out of a ticket. Besides, the badges, the courtesy shields, they don't work the way they used to.
Oh, really? Yeah. I've never had one, but I always just thought that was kind of a nice thing.
I had one from someone I worked with. Long story, I did some work for the family of someone who passed away, and I got a shield as a thank you. And in New York City, the shield worked great.
Yeah.
But once it stopped working in Nassau County, I remember coming home from somewhere and getting pulled over, and the cop was like apologetic.
Oh.
And he's like, listen, we just can't honor those. Hey, man, do you got to.
Sure.
So I learned as a kid, just painfully honest with cops.
Yes.
When cops pull me over, it's like the scene from Liar Liar. That's how I am. And usually they basically, you know, they appreciate not blowing smoke up there behind because they're lied to all day long every day.
It must be refreshing.
So, right. So, you know, tell the officer when he says, how fast were you going? I said, well, officer, as I drove by, I saw you, and I looked down, and I looked at the speedometer, and he goes, and what did it say? It said, pull over, because this officer's going to have a few words with you.
That's great.
And they laugh, and
that's great.
You're being honest with them. You don't have to say, you know, I was 25 over. You could say, I thought you would want to have a little conversation.
I'm going to note that down for my future
Thought
reference.
You would like to have a chat, and didn't want to make you drive too far to catch
that's
me.
Nice. It's really courtesy.
So let's talk about some of your favorite columns of recent days. Starting with, I mentioned EVs and Harleys. Let's combine that.
Oh, yeah.
Harley, tell us about that.
Cool bike.
No clutch, right?
No clutch. You don't have no gears, no oil to replace, none of that. No rumble, no growl. It does
what do they do for sound?
It does have a sound. You know, it's like a whirring sound.
Right.
If you're a Harley guy who's going to need the loud pipes,
right.
You're going to object, probably.
As a kid riding dirt bikes, the expression I always loved was loud pipes save lives.
Sure.
So what
to
do you do about
that? To which I say, if you're relying on your loud pipes to keep you safe,
you're
a
crutch. Trouble. Right.
Yeah, you got to be heads up. And honestly, you can do everything right, and you can still get in a lot of trouble on a motorcycle. So I think, yes, loud pipes are can be nice, but that should not be your safety plan.
The problem is when people see you coming,
yes,
they see a little blip instead of a big car, your brain,
yes,
assumes you're further away. So
yes,
the pipes kind of compensate for that.
Potentially. And I would say on this, the Livewire 1, there is a noise associated with the vehicle.
You can hear it coming.
It's not a loud pipe, but you can hear it.
Right.
And actually, I'm a big supporter. I think it makes sense for Harley to,
sure,
start having electric bikes. I love electric motorcycles. Actually, the act of riding a motorcycle, I think, is actually made more pure on an electric bike.
It's just you get because, that quiet, pleasant.
Yeah, it's not disturbed by, and I admit, I am not a hardcore biker. I'm not someone who has to ride a bike every day. I enjoy it.
Right.
But hey, I love the idea that you don't have to have, you know, ears and nerves that are frayed because you've been on the bike all day and it's very loud,
yeah,
and it's been vibrating and you've got the smell of the oil and just dirt. You don't have any of that, which I love. And the Livewire one, I think, is a great example. Zero does a great,
yeah,
job. Zero,
yeah,
is a California-based motorcycle maker, and they have been around for years now. And
there's one parked in front of my office just about
them.
Every day.
I love them. I think they look very cool. They're powerful. They're nimble. They don't have any of the cultural baggage that Harley might have.
Right.
They're well made. They're awesome. You can recharge those in 45 minutes to basically full,
right,
which is a lot better charging proposition than a car. So I'm a big fan. I really liked it. I did like the Livewire one. They're coming out with an S2 edition, which has like a very cool livery on it and looks more like an off-road bike that I think,
uh-huh,
will be cool. So I'm looking forward to that too. Actually, that company is no longer owned wholly by Harley Davidson. They've taken on other investors, and this is a new company that Harley spun off to share technology with and stuff. So exciting.
Top luxury convertibles from European supercars,
wow,
to U.S. classics. There were some great, oh, cars in that list.
Well, I can't remember exactly what I put on that list, but the first one that came to my mind is the 992 convertible. I,
right,
mean, you can't.
A friend of mine has one.
Oh,
I've driven it. It's,
oh,
spectacular.
If you can get the turbos, get the turbos.
He didn't because he wanted a stick shift.
Okay.
And I think they stopped them in 2014.
Why does Porsche do that?
I don't understand.
I don't
because
get
they
it.
Want the turbo to be the fastest.
It's,
and
yes,
intellectually, I understand.
Yes.
The dual clutch is faster than a stick.
Of course.
But you want to shift your own sometimes.
Every guy I talk to, that's the one thing they say. It's just really, it doesn't make, it makes theoretical sense maybe, but not logical sense to your buyer.
If you want to sell them, right, exactly.
Yeah.
I came very close to buying a 2014 911 Turbo,
mm-hmm,
the 996.2.
Mm-hmm.
And
how many miles did it have on it?
10, 11.
Oh, not very many.
And just gorgeous.
Yeah.
White over with a black interior with red everything. Red strip.
Cool.
Even Turbo
I
was
I love a
red.
White 911.
Yeah, it's just
yeah,
spectacular.
And why didn't you buy it?
Because I couldn't rationalize the price.
Uh-huh.
Because it's the same price
as
a new Carrera.
Now.
no, I think we peaked and sort of slipped a little bit in price. And the price it was offered at,
mm-hmm,
while we were looking at it, like literally,
yeah,
it's like
you
watching
the ticker.
Yeah, it just kept going up and up. It was like watching the gas roll over. What if everyone at work were an expert communicator? What if every doc, message, and email they wrote was perfectly clear and concise? Inbox numbers would drop, customer satisfaction scores would rise, and everyone would be more productive. That's where Grammarly comes in. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that understands your business and can transform it through better communication. Companies that use Grammarly save an average of 19 days per employee per year. That's because with Grammarly's AI, what used to take a few hours only takes a few clicks. Like generating an instant first draft in your company voice or tailoring a message to your specific audience and goals. And Grammarly's personalized on-brand writing help is built in everywhere your team works, across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, it's safe, secure, and already IT approved. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly with their words and their data. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Grammarly, easier said, done.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So, there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
But man, you know.
Another convertible I love, back to your point, the Bentley Continental GTC.
So the only problem with that convertible is the coupe is so spectacular.
Yeah.
Just
but
gorgeous.
Don't hold it against the convertible.
Okay. Fair.
I mean, the coupe for sure, I think the year that it first came out, it might have been 2018, 2017.
The new version.
The new version.
Yeah.
That was my favorite car of the year. It's so,
really?
It's just perfect.
Those quilted seats.
I know.
They're just, it's, so the one, so we all have regrets. I have a question for you about regrets.
Okay.
I came this close on Bring a Trailer. I ended up getting the R8 instead to getting a white on white GTC coupe,
Speed.
Not convertible.
Okay.
But it was the 8-cylinder, which is fine for me. And, and I just didn't pull the trigger another column of yours is how to buy cars at online auctions.
Yeah.
And one of the rules you put down is one of my rules. You figure out in advance what the price is and you don't go over that price.
Yeah.
And the car sold for $2,000 over as far as I was wanting to go.
Yeah.
And that's one of them that got away. The white on white is just
But at the
insane.
Time, you could not have known that you were so close. I mean, right? That's why you thought it was going to keep going up.
So my wife's Panamera, every now and then you get a bunch of people that have been kind of, you know, just fooling around with the auctions. You could tell when someone is in a serious buyer.
Uh-huh.
And so you want to just have a knockout punch that sort of scares
don't,
everybody.
Don't do
away.
The nickel and dime thing.
Right.
Up
and so, and
you
know, maybe you pay $1,000 more, but you just scare everybody away.
Yeah.
And I was shocked we got that car. Because the MSRP, and you could go to Monroney Labels to pull up the original MSRP sticker with all the options and what it literally cost, except Ferraris don't work with that. But it works with most other brands. And the lunatic who bought it, not a Panamera Turbo or a GTS, a 4S, which is like middle of the line, paid 160 something for the car.
Wow.
They literally must have just gone check
all
every
the boxes.
Option.
Yeah.
And so you get to pay well less than half of that.
Yeah.
That's a great deal for a used car. And then, you know, the insurance company will pay you. Now you pay more for market price or a stated value with your insurer.
Mm-hmm.
But hold that aside. Give me one other convertible that you really, because there's nothing to dislike about the Bentley, except you know, maintenance is expensive and they've become more reliable for sure.
No, the 765 LT. I mean, if you want to talk high end supercars,
right?
I liked it in part because it was quote unquote more drivable than some of the contemporaries, just in terms
That's
of
the
clearance.
That's the thought of McLaren's, right?
Yeah, visibility. I mean, these things to me, honestly, and I say this knowing we are very spoiled people.
Yes.
They're not relaxing and enjoyable to drive in city conditions.
Well, especially
often.
The special sport edition. They're
stressful.
Too frenetic,
yes,
right?
Yes. And, you know, you always see the guys who, like, put them on a trailer to 5 blocks away from there. I've literally seen this at clubs in New York City.
That's too
some
much.
Guy unloading, and then he pulls it around. in front of the
club.
Was
that because they don't want to put the mileage on it?
I think it's everything. You know, cobblestones, they don't want to put the mileage on it. Who wants to do that?
I love my M6 because it's got the settings for regular, and then you can upgrade the steering, the suspension, and the engine.
Yeah.
So you could go drive like a human. Hey, let's have some fun. Okay, full-blown hooligan.
Yeah.
And that's a convertible with a stick shift, and I can never give that up because the 8 is now also dual clutch, no more stick. And I just think that's such a delightful car. But it's not a hypercar. The McLaren's a hypercar. What's the interior like? Is it?
It's great. I mean, it's very
cockpit-like.
I would say it's back to our conversation about screens versus buttons.
Yeah.
It's a nice medium.
Okay,
mix. Yeah, you know, there's enough space to put like a cup of coffee.
Uh-huh.
You know, some of these cars don't even have a cup holder.
Yeah, there's no cup holders in half the Ferraris.
Yeah, there are some nods to practicality that I think, let's be realistic. Just because you're driving a supercar doesn't mean you're not going to have a coffee.
So with my car club,
uh-huh,
when we go out, a bunch of us will go out. We will stop for coffee, throw the cups away, and then everybody gets in and drives.
All right.
Well,
that's
and off
very
you go.
Proper.
Right.
Now, I hope you still listen to the radio in your supercar. And not just the sound of the engine.
So some of the guys in the group, all of my cars are, you know, modest compared to. So my Audi or BMW, although the funny thing is, the car that attracts more attention, everybody loves, is the Vette, the 67 Vette.
I'm
guys
obsessed.
Lose their mind
yeah, I'm
over
obsessed.
It. And it's like that light Nassau blue with a white interior, like all
so
white
cool.
interior.
It's
as gorgeous as any car ever made.
There aren't many in LA.
That said, a buddy has a Ferrari F430 without the stick. He got the F1 in a Spider. And there is no radio in that. I mean, there is one. I don't know if it's ever been on.
Maybe not.
The top down, the V8's right over your shoulder.
Oh, that's
it's astonishing.
That's
right.
Nice.
And that's his second Ferrari because the F50, the 550 was his first love. And then he decided life is short. I'm going to get a convertible also.
I think a lot of people are feeling that, you know, you only live once in this
post-pandemic,
day and age.
And you don't know when your number comes up.
Correct.
Sometimes you roll. And if you can afford it.
I think we're all feeling that.
Right. So there's a difference between me running around and spending 50 grand on a stupid little car and other people dropping multi-six figures.
Well,
and, you know, the thing I love about the BMW is my oil change is $40.
That's
and
great.
You bring the Ferrari in and it's $2,000 by the time you're done with, oh, I had to replace some belts and a filter. I gave you a discount. It's $2,200.
Yeah.
That's a different experience and lifestyle.
And let's just say, if you're going to be very concerned about that type of maintenance on your car or minor, you know, fixing minor things like dings or chips or whatever, you probably can't afford the car because you got to be able to afford the car and what it's going to cost.
Comfortably. Be able to sleep at night.
So that you're not just being a jerk about it, about who sits in it or who parks
it. No, you got
to
drive. You got
to
enjoy it. You can't worry about the mileage.
No.
Right?
And if
in
you
fact,
can't crest that amount of resources to spend on it, I don't think you can afford it, really.
His Ferraris have kept me away because every, like the other day, they were both in the shop and he's like, you want to go for a ride? I said, and he's like, I got no cars. I'm like, what do you mean? Where's the 911?
Yeah. The struggle is real.
Right.
I mean, these are very rarefied.
Back and forth
air.
From the burbs into New York City every day in the 911.
Poor guy.
Convertible with a stick. So, it's the struggle is real.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So a couple of other pieces I got to ask about. Mercedes trimming entry-level cars to focus on high-end.
Yeah.
I have a vivid recollection of when Mercedes was, why are you going down market?
Yes.
You're going for volume. You're a high-end.
Yes.
No, we have to do this in order to expand our reach and blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
What happened?
They realized they don't have to anymore. I think they got tired of competing with BMW.
Right.
Biggest luxury automaker. And they started making these super high-end, series with the AMG GT, with their G-Wagons, that, just as we spoke about, are over $200,000 versions. They are doing more with the Maybach brand, which
was kind of on hiatus for a while.
It's
on, right?
It's very touch and go. Some years they make cars, some years they don't. And I've asked them about it, and they just said, well, you know, some years we
whenever.
Make, yeah, sometimes
when
we
the
do,
Sheik wants 10, we make 10.
Right. But the years that they do make the Maybach, it's so profitable for them. And I just think they were already slicing the pie so thinly. I couldn't, you know, my job is to think about this. I couldn't even look at a car and tell you what C series it was, C class it was, or, you know, the A class, or is it an E, or, you know, it was becoming a very thinly sliced pie. And I think the same was happening to margins. But then, you know, you start to realize this trend of, there seems to be no lack of people wanting to spend money on cars, a lot of money. And when you start to personalize it and offer all of these special editions and way to make it your own, especially in the higher models, the profits are so lucrative there. Mm-hmm. You don't have to make the lower ones.
Right. Look at BMW. Well, there's no longer a 1, but there's a 2, a 3, a 4, a 5. They stopped the 6, a 7, an 8.
Yeah.
And then on the trucks is an X1, X2, X3, X4, X5,
and now
X6,
add
X7.
In the I's, the electric version, you know, the iX, the i3, the i8, of course, which let's put a pin on that. We need a new car, a halo car from BMW.
That i8 was almost
a
fabulous car.
Yes.
They put that dumb 3-cylinder engine in there. If they would have put the M3 twin turbo 6, that would have been a monster.
To me, that was a lost opportunity.
Oh my God, that would have been a hypercar for the ages.
I love that car. And
they're
beat everyone. They beat everyone when that came out.
To a hybrid.
That was it. Yeah. And now it's like, well, what have you really followed that with in terms of something that's exciting? They've got EVs, but nothing that's really exciting.
That i8 with a real engine would have been the first hybrid supercar out there. So let's talk about hybrid supercars. You did a column on Rimac. Mm-hmm. And what they're doing for Porsche, Bugatti, whoever else.
So interesting. Porsche, Bugatti, VW.
All the VW brands.
Yeah,
gotcha.
VW. This brand, I mean, Mate Rimac is a young man.
Yeah.
When I spoke with him last year at Pebble Beach, he was around 30. No, don't quote
really?
Me.
That's
he is
insane.
A young man.
I thought
and
he was
he
much
has
older
it together.
Than that.
He's got and the amount of money that he's got Porsche giving him to make components and other things that they won't talk about is fascinating. I think this is really a it's already
his Rimacs are gorgeous also.
Gorgeous. And I'm already working on they tell me they're going to have a production car that I can get into in the States.
When?
Maybe next month.
Maybe no next kidding.
Month. Yeah.
And when is it going to be for sale? Or we have
know.
No idea.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's the weird thing is, like, why are you telling me about 2024 cars now?
This is why, as a reviewer, this is a problem I had with the Cadillac Lyriq.
Right.
They have us in a car, but then they tell us, well, it's a
and
it's
not
a
production version, right.
Well, then it's like, that means that anything I say that's wrong with it, you guys can just say, well, it was a pre-production. Meanwhile, they've sent a few out, but they won't say how many. And then the next batch is going to be around in 2023, 2024. So it's still a year in the future.
Right. Might as well give me a clay sculpture.
Get us excited a year from now. I mean, this is very anticlimactic.
Yeah, to say the very least.
Yeah.
Let's talk about my favorite column of yours, want to take up track driving?
Yes.
Don't make these rookie mistakes.
Yes.
So how often are you on a track where you're really letting loose?
I would say 5 times a year.
Okay.
Yeah.
I try and get up twice a year.
Okay,
but
that's great. For me, it's like if Bugatti's got something, McLaren, Lamborghini, and Ferrari, they're all great about having people on the track. Actually, Maserati just had a track day.
That new 2 whatever it is, 220C, whatever it's going to call
The MC20.
Yeah.
MC.
I think you're right.
MC20.
That's a very handsome car.
Maserati MC20. Very good looking car. We had it on the track at Willow Springs, which is like the local track in LA. It's old track, historic. So track
are you
days.
Burning through through tires and brakes? Like,
no,
not at all.
I mean, the thing with journalist track days is that it's a very controlled environment, which is not to say that people don't go off the track.
Yeah,
people go off the track, but bad habits on the track. I'll talk about for me, and
go
I
ahead.
Make no pretense to being a professional car racer. I am not.
Don't try
I'm a
this
journalist.
At home.
Pay attention. That's the number
Come
one.
On.
This is the number one thing.
I don't believe that.
I lose focus so quickly. I get bored after about 2 laps. I
no
really do.
No way.
Which causes you to be very sleepy on other things. You know, it just causes you to flub braking and, you know, turn in too early. All the other things, to me, come from a lack of attention and focus.
All right. So we were just up on Lime Rock. I went with a bunch of guys. And, you know, you're in a full Nomex suit.
Yeah.
You have the
balaclava
hoodie,
on.
Right.
Yeah.
And then you put the hood on, the helmet on, and you have to kind of back your way into the seat. And
can you even turn your head?
You can, although you can see why the F1 drivers have to work out because your neck is sore the next day. And they cinch you in so tightly. Now, I don't get panic attacks. I'm not claustrophobic. I have no fear of heights. That sort of stuff doesn't bother me. They cinched me in so tight, I felt like I couldn't breathe.
Yeah.
And for a moment, I'm like, this is a horrible mistake. You're going to pass out from lack of oxygen until you leave the pit lane.
Yes.
And then you are just so hyper-focused that you just completely forget your body. I forgot how uncomfortable I was. The rest of the world fell away. It was just me. The wheel, the gas, the brake.
Breathing. Remember to breathe.
You don't even think about it. It's just the autonomous system takes over.
I will say.
I don't know how you lose. Especially,
I lose
this was in a Roush Mustang, which is what, 700 horsepower? What do you do in like a full-blown mid-engine monster?
It's like Ferdinand out in the pasture. I'm just looking at daisies. I will say, I think... everybody will improve their on street driving by having a track day.
For sure.
Because first of all, the proper placement of your arms and your knees and your legs, I think most people get completely wrong the moment they get into a car.
First, I'm at Skip Barber. You're doing these different skill trainings and these different semi-courses before you're on the track. And the instructor is constantly 10 and 2, both hands, 10 and 2, both hands on the wheel. I always drive with an elbow and a hand on a stick. So he's like, you drop your hand off the wheel to shift gears. Keep your hands up, both hands. Nine and three
is really what you want to have with a 90-degree angle.
90-degree angle, but they want your thumbs over.
Lightly. Light touch.
So the skid pad, so we got to use the new Supras on the skid pad.
Mm-hmm.
And... you know, I'm pretty good at recovering from a skid, but it's a little frenetic. And this instructor said, dude, just relax.
Yes.
Just breathe. Let it flow.
Breathe.
And suddenly it's just
light,
easy
input. Smooth is fast.
Slow is fast. Smooth is fast.
Correct. And the other thing that I think really, it does really teach you is to keep your eyes up and look ahead.
Look where you want to go.
If you're looking at the corner, It's already too late.
Right.
You got to be looking at the next
one already.
And I think that really helps you when you're on the street driving. Just anticipate where other people are and what they're doing. Stay alert. Stay focused far ahead. Not just down the hood of your car.
Right.
But
be
thinking like two or three turns ahead and everything else will flow from that.
Especially when you're driving 60 miles an hour.
Yeah.
You can't look 30 feet ahead.
You're already too late.
You slam on
you're
the brake. It's going to take you 100 feet to stop. You have to look way past that.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. What other rookie mistakes do you want to tell people about?
The other thing that I do find myself, I'll just speak for myself because, you know, why not? Don't focus on the other people. Focused on your own line on the track, that's the number one thing. You know, if you get so, that for me, if I get so wrapped into trying to keep up with so-and-so who's in front of me or so-and-so who I think's coming, breathing down my back, I'm going to get all tense and all anxious and whatever, and I'm not going to have the best line going into a turn, coming out of a turn.
You're doing lead follow, in other words.
Sure, yeah, but, you know, sometimes you're in two groups, and one group might overtake another group.
Right, that's always fun.
You know, of course. Then there's always someone who's going to be sort of behind the pack, and sometimes you end up lapping them. So it can be a little bit like...
Okay, we had a guy tap out, not with our group, with a different group.
Yeah.
He was like, this is too stressful for me.
Yeah, you just...
Here's the crazy thing. You're following... So the fun thing about the instructors... You're in these hopped up 700 horsepower Ford Mustang Roush editions.
Cool.
Or the last time we were there, it was RS4s, 911s, and M3s. And they're driving streetcars.
Cool.
They're driving Altima's Camrys. And it's all you can do to keep up with them because they are so good.
It's another level.
But here's the thing that I kind of figured out about halfway through the track day was, wait a second, I'm in a high performance track
Vehicle
tuned vehicle.
Yeah.
If the Camry can make it through at this speed, I'm pretty sure this car can.
Oh, yeah.
And once you get that in your head, it's like people saying, wow, you were flying around that track. I was just doing what he was doing.
Yeah.
The assumption is if he made it through the turn, I'm just following his track.
You really
precisely.
See the driver makes all the difference.
Huge.
I've seen some of the pros, they'll take a minivan out just for fun and lead the journalists around in a minivan.
Hilarious.
I mean, it's hilarious. And we're still doing all we can just to keep up because it really does, you know, a good driver in a bad car is probably always going to be better and faster than a bad driver in a good car.
So you get to go on tracks 5 times a
year. Yeah.
Their cars.
Yeah, their cars.
How often do you do anything where you're not reviewing a car, where you're just reviewing the track? Like I'm trying to remember, did you do was it the Lamborghini driving school or the Mercedes?
I did a Ferrari driving school. Which great memory, which I would just plug, you know, every major
automaker. 10 grand, well worth it, right?
Completely well worth it. Anyone can Google Ferrari driving school, BMW driving school, Aston Martin driving school, any of these. They all have driving schools. They are so fun. The instructors are like your best coach, your favorite coach. They're there to help you succeed.
Right.
It's fun.
It's insanely fun.
You can do it with family members, you know, friends, coworkers. I highly recommend it. And that was, to your point, less about the car and more to just about improving as a driver. Worth it.
Like, you really can't. The average driver is not going to be running a Ferrari at the limits of its performance.
No, and it goes back to the point that it makes, when you do get back on the road, it makes that driving so much more pleasant because you're aware of what a car can really do.
Right.
So that you're not intimidated just to drive on the highway. I mean, because you've seen, even if you aren't driving it yourself, you see the instructors do things with cars that are unbelievable. And you realize, we in normal everyday driving, we don't get near the limits
of what
the cars can do.
And I recall being on the highway a couple of years ago, and there was an incident that the only reason I managed not to plow into this accident in front of me was because of the training that they had.
Amazing.
You know, there's only so much traction on a tire. You can either put it all on braking or put it all on turning, but you can't do both.
No.
And that's how people get into trouble. Yeah. And I remember saying, I'm just going to stay with the brake as long as I can, loosen up and turn away. But I had to bleed off that speed.
Yeah, of course.
And, you know, if it wasn't for Skip Barber, I would have been the third or fourth car in that pileup.
That's a great advertisement.
100%.
Yeah. You kind of realize, okay, it's weight management a lot of the time. When you're, especially if you're in like a
momentum-style
car.
It's
managing weight.
It's whether the car is sitting on the back tires or sitting on the front tires.
Yeah.
And that transition is also where a lot of people get into trouble.
What if everyone at work were an expert communicator? What if every doc, message, and email they wrote was perfectly clear and concise? Inbox numbers would drop, customer satisfaction scores would rise, and everyone would be more productive. That's where Grammarly comes in. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that understands your business and can transform it through better communication. Companies that use Grammarly save an average of 19 days per employee per year. That's because with Grammarly's AI, what used to take a few hours only takes a few clicks, like generating an instant first draft in your company voice or tailoring a message to your specific audience and goals. And Grammarly's personalized on-brand writing help is built in everywhere your team works, across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, it's safe, secure, and already IT approved. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly with their words and their data. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Grammarly, easier said, done.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard. Yeah.
So let's talk about one other piece you wrote that I have to ask about, which is this sort of ode to LA you did. Tell us a little bit about that. And you're kind of bi-coastal. You're in New York and LA. Tell us about LA and what's New York like these days?
I would say, first of all, that I love New York more than anything. I identify as a New Yorker. I've lived here for 17 years. I'm originally from Oregon, but really came.
Do you still have an apartment here?
No.
So,
but I do have a driver's license. That's a New York driver's license. I'm a New York booster through and through, but I will say California has two things that New York doesn't have.
Weather.
Actually, I like the seasons. I like the weather in New York. I prefer it because California is just
winter.
Boring. No, I love winter. That's my second favorite season in New York behind fall.
Yeah.
Anyway, California has better Mexican food than New York City.
Okay.
And it has better car culture, I have to say. The driving roads in and around Los Angeles especially are world class. And I have been everywhere. The roads there are phenomenal, especially during COVID when driving was like the only thing we could really do. It really was wonderful to drive on the canyon roads outside Malibu, to drive up Angeles Crest, up Highway 2, to drive out to the desert, Joshua Tree. I mean, there's so many options. Pacific Coast Highway, of course. So that has been really lovely. Mm-hmm. That said, I'm really happy to be back in New York at the moment. New York does seem different since I've left and since COVID. I'm sure you've recognized
so
that.
So the residential parts of New York are just jamming.
But
you go into
crowd.
Midtown, it's a little, it's funny, the Bloomberg building, which is now hybrid for now.
Yes.
A nice sunny day, this building is probably 80-85% what it full strength. But if you have your choice, it's pouring rain. Why am I going to come in today?
Completely.
Unless I have a podcast. Pre-war car market. Why is it thriving?
For every reason we've just described, because we're all sitting at home looking at Bring a Trailer with a lot of time on our hands. We might have some extra money that we haven't spent on travel or, you know, we've pulled out of the stock market because it's a bit scary. And we are just putting it into our project cars. Also, I think to your point, there's this sensibility of like, hey, I don't know what's going to happen in the future. I'm going to enjoy this now.
Right.
And things are meant to be enjoyed, cars especially. I mean, it's just a shame when you see some of these cars and they're not really driven and enjoyed.
I stopped even commenting on Cards and Bids or Bring a Trailer about this, but every time I see a favorite car come up with like 100 miles.
Yeah.
It's
I think there were some Carrera GTs that had very low miles.
So it was clearly bought as an investment.
Yes.
And, you know, it's like, come on. Yeah. It's sort of when the speculators come into your favorite space, the neighborhood gentrifies, you have to move, and all the fun goes out of it.
Yeah.
And there's like a handful of us who whine about it, and everybody else shouts them down. But that's always like, why buy the car? So part of the appeal of something like, I didn't get the 427, I got the 327 in the vet. Because or the 63 for that matter, with the accidental split rear window, which is worth $100,000 more than my car. Because at that price, listen, anything you pay less than $100,000 for, you could drive and you'll get most of your money back if it's a collectible.
Sure.
But $400,000, suddenly every mile you start driving has a dollar figure associated with it.
Maybe. I don't think for all of those cars. I think for some, maybe. Really special cars that maybe have a particular history or a racing history. But, you know, I think part of the thing, too, is there are a lot more events that you can use your collectible car for. I mean, rallies, meetups, concours,
cars and coffee.
Meetings, completely. There's a lot more of that stuff, and everyone just wants to do it, and you're going to want to show up in something cool.
Right.
So I think that's driving a lot of it too. And I also think it's considered cool to drive your car now.
Hey, man, that's how I roll. Yeah. To me, it's the thought of saying, well, I just spent all this money and time and effort to keep this car running and well-maintained. You know, to say I'm just going to leave this, it's not good for the car to just sit.
No. No, it's not good.
The only issue I have with that is it's hard to find leaded gas for that. Last column question. Jennifer Connelly's 9/11 in Top Gun.
Oh, yeah. Cool, right?
So it's funny because when we saw the movie recently, and when he pulls up in front of her house on the motorcycle, I leaned over to my wife. I'm like, nice 9/11. I bet that's hers. Because why would they leave it there?
Right.
I had no idea that that was a collector's car that the guy had loaned it to the... two of them to the shoot.
In California, too. And they found him through a couple of guys sort of in the Luftical world.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I spoke with the director of that movie. He claims it was a loan, that the guy just loaned him. It didn't even charge him, you know, a renter.
Really?
Yeah. Just because he's a car guy, he's part of this R group.
Meanwhile, your car is the 9/11 in Maverick Top Gun.
Cool, right? I know.
What do I have to pay for that privilege?
I know. And he has some other cool cars. I did a little research. So he's just a car guy.
He's got 10 911s. You have 10 Porsches, you said.
Something like that, yeah.
And what was it? Kelly McGinnis had a Speedster in the first?
She had a 356, yeah. Mm-hmm. That actually wasn't a real one.
It was a replica.
A replica made by a Canadian company, but still looked
cool.
Who
could tell the difference?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that
it's
original
good they updated
frame.
It. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it makes perfect sense.
You
know, and it actually, the whole thing about the F-18s versus the fifth generation, you couldn't stick with the 356.
No,
it wouldn't have worked.
Make it fresh.
Let's talk a little bit about F1. Obviously, the Netflix show, enormously.
Drive to Survive.
Yep. Enormously popular. I'm halfway through the fourth season. I mean, I know there are spoilers, but, you know, it's still on a...
Who's your driver?
Daniel Ricciardo on McLaren. Like, he's such an interesting character. I'm kind of rooting for him. And then Carlos Sainz, who moved over to Ferrari.
Yes.
Like, here's a kid who just grew up worshiping Ferrari.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that he's driving for them, you could just see, like, the glee every time he puts on that red driver's suit. They're just really interesting. The challenging thing is wrapping your head around the competition between the drivers on the same team, because it is supposed to be a team, right?
Yeah, you know, it's been very interesting, especially this year, to see Lewis Hamilton as he fights his way back to the top, and how the whole team, you know, goes around him to make that happen.
I mean, he passed Michael Schumacher in, like, just about every record he
set. Yeah, and to your point, it's been great to see how George Russell has really taken his role as the supporter so we can get Lewis forward. They seem to have a really good working relationship. I think in past years with other teams, it's been a lot more competitive with the drivers on the Mercedes team. But George Russell seems to be such a team player. He's so young and enthusiastic, and he's so good too that he really pushes Lewis forward.
And
it's
and you know,
awesome
when you're that age, you could say, hey, my time will come eventually.
Of course.
The guy who runs the Mercedes, Toto, what's his name?
Toto Wolff.
Such a fascinating character on the Netflix show.
As
is the guy who runs the Red Bull team and the guy who runs McLaren. It's really
a cast
or
of
Haas for that matter.
It's a cast of characters, which is really I'm really glad Liberty Media has taken a aggressive stance to promoting Formula One in the US. I mean, it's actually taken years and years to get proper broadcasting, proper promotion, proper
and
marketing.
And tracks. So you have Miami, you have Las Vegas,
Where else are they gonna open Grand Prix tracks? We don't know. Those three for sure. Vegas is gonna happen for the first time in this current era next year at some point in the fall. I think they still have yet to release a date. Miami just happened. I saw the final numbers. They're claiming 240,000 tickets.
That's a lot.
Which is insane.
It's like Super Bowl plus.
Yes.
Two Super Bowls.
And it's so interesting because most of my friends are not in the car world, but they were asking me about the Miami race. They, for whatever reason...
And this is all from Netflix.
Yes.
And let's talk a little bit about Audi and Porsche joining Formula One. Why, after all these years, you would have thought Porsche would have been right in there the whole time.
Well, Porsche has, in the past, had supplied parts to Formula One. In the past, it's been in and out, and of course has focused on other racing series, including Formula E. You know, they got a team, a racing team with Tag Heuer in Formula E right now. But I think what has caused part of this is Formula One has announced that they're going to be changing some of the rules for the engines in the next few years, which will allow new and hybrid more hybrid technology to be involved in the cars. Mm-hmm. And I think brands like Porsche and Audi are seeing
they want to be there.
They want to be there. It's growing, and it will really, truly help them develop their electric technologies for future consumer cars.
Since we're talking about Porsche and Audi, let's talk about their e-offerings.
Mm-hmm.
The Taycan, especially
Superb.
The Turbo, spectacular
Love
car.
It.
The GT e-tron.
Yes.
Other than the fact that it was a horrible olive drab color.
Oh, no.
And these are really lovely cars.
Yes.
But they're very pricey. When do these things sort of become a middle-class purchase? And I know when I'm talking about Porsche, like the Macan starts at $50,000 and the Cayman starts at around the same price. So they are upper-middle-class cars, but when do the EVs come down?
Well, I think we might have to look outside the luxury automakers for EVs that are priced in a very affordable way. Hyundai has the EVs that people are obsessed with.
All the Koreans.
About.
So Kia, Ioniq is which brand? Is that
Hyundai? That's Hyundai.
So
yeah.
Those cars are fabulous. Reasonably priced.
Yes.
Fully featured. Mm-hmm. It's not like they're missing a whole lot.
Mm-hmm. But to answer your point about Porsche and Audi, I don't think we're going to see affordable EVs from those guys for a long time. Why?
Because they can sell them at that price?
They can sell them at the high prices. So why would they need to go down at all?
I would really consider a Tesla Plaid, the Tesla S.
Okay.
Except I have a lot of friends with Teslas.
They're very ubiquitous.
Well, that's number one. It's an old design. But my real beef is the fit and finish of the interior.
It's still a problem. And even back in the day when you would just gently or matter-of-factly point out, these cars are not well made.
Right.
It was like you had just attacked, you know, personally attacked Elon Musk and you were threatening his identity and all. It's like, no, but when
I got into a Taycan Turbo the other day. It's just a spectacular interior.
Yes, because it's done by a proper German automaker that has been doing this for 70
years. Even the Ford 150 Lightning was a really well-made
Same
interior.
Same with the Hummer.
Right.
So I do think just because the long-standing older automakers have not done electric vehicles until now doesn't mean they can't. Just means they haven't had to or they haven't wanted to. But now that they're starting to make them, we're finally getting actual luxury quality fit and finish manufacturing, you know, body panels fitting together properly, software that actually works. We are not getting this from Lucid, Rivian, Tesla, which are startups.
The one thing I could say about Tesla, I think their technology and their software is still way ahead of everybody else's. And the over-the-air updates, way ahead of everybody else. Mm-hmm. I don't know when we're going to have like a phone that you just put down. Eventually, I want to drive into the garage and have the charger be on the floor. And I don't have to. Right. But that's coming eventually.
Sure.
I think that's the appeal of the hybrid now. We're still in a transition from ICE to EV.
Of course. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of hype around EVs, but again, if you look at the reality of it, you cannot drive an electric vehicle. Range is, you know, about 300. That's kind of the going rate. But that's really under perfect conditions.
Right. If you're driving fast.
I mean, really, in real world terms, you're going to get like over 100 miles maybe. That's not really a road trip distance.
Right, that's right.
Yeah.
All right, so I only have you for a couple more minutes. Let's jump to our speed round, starting with best used car for under $50,000. What would you tell people to get?
Can I say a collectible vintage
car? You can say whatever you want.
I want
used or collectible.
I want a C3 Corvette.
You can find them for under $50,000.
Oh, easily. You can find them you can find a driver quality.
And either the T-tops or the convertible.
Yes. And I think I keep reading these Hagerty reports and, you know, Sotheby's reports. values are going up of the muscle cars in general. I think they look so cool. I think they're about to hit their stride.
All right. Best collectible under $100,000.
If you can get a like 996 on a higher mileage, so you're going to pay
less.
I still think values for those are going up. They have
really?
Been, yes, they have been going up, but I don't see any reason why those are not going to stop gaining value.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I'm going to regret it, passing on that.
I think so, and I don't think mileage matters. I really don't. If the car's been maintained, if it's had, at least in California,
no rust.
Exactly. California car, call it one or two owners, properly maintained with a good ledger of records. Hey, if it's got a lot of miles, but it's been taken care of.
What car would you own if money was no object?
Mercedes 300 SL Gullwing.
That's mine also. That's a good pick.
Thanks.
It's,
I did not plan that. That's what came from my heart.
I don't know if you saw the Paul Newman version, the sort of light blue with the plaid seats.
Oh.
Spectacular.
Yeah. Did you see the SLR Umlaut Coupe? That sold for $140,000.
You wrote a column on and how do you insure that?
Yeah.
I mean, that's
there when they announced the sale.
It's a made-up number. I don't really believe
A private auction.
Right, right.
Orchestrated very closely.
Yeah.
But exciting nonetheless. But that line of cars is gorgeous.
Insane. Yeah. Just insane. So forget money at no object. Just rationally, what's your next irresponsible auto purchase?
Well, I know I keep saying this, but I really do want a C3 Corvette. I'm going to keep hammering
all right.
on that. I will never replace the 75 Rolls-Royce Silver Shadow that I have.
Yeah, what's the deal with that?
I love that
land yacht.
Oh, my God. Oh, it's so glorious. You can get those for pretty inexpensive. The key is to have a mechanic who can work on them.
Okay.
And I do have that.
You get parts?
For sure. They're everywhere.
And do kids pull up next to you and talk about Grey Poupon?
Yeah, they do.
You get that joke?
Yeah, I've had people send me Grey Poupon in the mail.
Get out.
Yep.
That's hilarious.
The little packets they sent me
so
back.
Funny.
And the one great thing about that car, in L.A., you know, it's all just a real big ego contest with cars in L.A., going out in Beverly Hills, you know,
you roll up
West
in that
Hollywood,
car, you're keeping your own
right
with anybody, right?
Exactly.
Next
They're
to the Ferrari, next
front
to the McLaren.
And, center, and that car is not an expensive car.
No.
It makes you feel like $1 million, though.
Right.
When all those other guys have every other thing, it's great.
Last two questions. What's the fastest car you've ever been in?
Oh, well, Bugatti, of course.
Chiron. The Chiron?
Yeah.
Right. And now here's the trick question.
Okay.
Not the fastest car you've ever been in, but what's the fastest you've ever driven?
Well, I would say I was on the track in Spain with Ferrari earlier this year, and I don't know, we probably were 160 or so on the backstretch.
That's you know, Autobahn speed.
Yeah,
right.
But you're 160 miles per hour, not kilometers.
But I hope you're paying attention and not getting distracted.
No, I was in that moment. I was paying attention.
I think that would tend to focus your attention.
Yeah.
All right. So let's jump to our favorite questions that we ask all of our guests, starting with. Tell us what you're streaming these days. What kept you entertained during the pandemic?
Okay, the most recent, within the last few weeks, Mayor of Kingstown with Jeremy Renner. Mm-hmm. Have you watched this at all?
No, it looks like disturbing.
It's very violent,
but
it's very good. I mean, he's incredible. The guy from Brotherhood's in it, the main brother who played the cop. I don't want to spoil anything with that, but I binged that completely. Love it. Mayor of Kingstown, a little bit violent.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing that I just started since being here in New York that was a recommendation from Ian, who colors my hair, is Hacks.
Loved it. Oh,
really?
My God.
Yeah.
It's so great.
And I had seen that
so
and
good.
Passed it a million times. And he's like, no, you really need to give it a look. And I've watched like 5 episodes just back to back.
It's just hilarious.
Great. Hilarious.
My problem with binging something like that is there's only 3 seasons. It's a short season. You kind of want to make it last a little bit, don't they?
They go really fast.
No, they really do.
Yeah.
I've been trying to watch less really violent stuff,
and
that's why. Although we've been watching Outlander, and some of the scenes are just you know, torturing.
I will admit to covering my eyes at some points.
No, see if I'm gonna watch it, I'm gonna watch it.
No, I have no problem like literally fast forwarding or covering my eyes. So yeah.
Tell us about your mentors who helped shape your career.
That's a great question. I have to say I've already spoken about Matthew DePaula, who was the editor who hired me at Forbes and who just saw this like very young trained journalist who knew nothing about cars and really helped me shape a perspective on it. And then Joanne Mueller, who was the Detroit bureau chief at Forbes when I was there, she's now at Axios writing about transportation. Mm-hmm. She is just a beacon of hope and light and optimism, a true professional journalist. Love her. So yeah, Joanne Mueller has great content. She's writing for Axios now.
Interesting. Tell us about some of your favorite books and what you're reading right now.
I just finished Bell Hooks' New Visions, mm-hmm. of All About Love, which is not a new book. It's new to me. It sounds a little, you know, gushy, but it's a really beautiful book about how our culture lacks love in the culture. And it just felt, reading it, it felt like really just a balm, because we all have had quite a chaotic,
aggressive
5 years. And it has seemed that people are really becoming polarized and tribal. And, you know, and so reading that, it really was a beautiful commentary on the importance of love, in addition to romantic love, brotherly love, love for others, love for self, mm-hmm. Forgiving parents for not loving you perfectly. It was really a great book. And then the other one that I'm still going through is called The Artist's Way, which is by Julia Cameron. It's an old one.
My wife is a big fan of that book.
Yes. It's the type of book that you just want to reread every like 10 years or so, because it really does sort of free you up from whatever thing you're locked into. It's great for people who were creative as children, and every child is creative. The point of the book is every child is creative somewhere along the way that gets pushed out, mm-hmm. from a lot of us. And it's just about being free as a creative in any tiny little way.
Really interesting. What sort of advice would you give to a college grad who is interested in a career in either journalism or automotives or whatever?
Do what you're excited about. I would say two things. Don't take a job that's very depressing to you, even if you think you should. Don't do it. Just don't do it. And the second one is, take a job where you can see where it gets you somewhere else and to a point you want to be.
Even if the path.
Yeah. Even if the job isn't perfect for you in that moment, take it if it gets you to a point where you might want to be, which is how it worked out for me at Forbes. I knew I don't really necessarily want to write about cars, but it gets me in somewhere that I want to be. So have an open mind, a mind open enough to be able to maybe do that and to pivot if you need to. And then also, you know, it's so cliche, but like, don't do something that isn't exciting. Because if you're not excited about it, how can you expect your readers, your clients, your colleagues to be excited about it if you aren't?
Really interesting. And our final question, what do you know about the world of writing, automobiles, luxury, travel today that you wish you knew 20 years or so ago when you were really a young cub reporter?
That's a good question. I think what I wish I knew about the world in general is that you can kind of do whatever you want. There are no rules. There's no set thing that says you can't talk to this person, you can't ask that person that thing, you can't try to find out more about this just because you don't have that background. The
just
options
do
are just do it. Just be bold. Be bolder than you think you're allowed to be. I think, you know, when, at least for me, when I was younger, it's all about trying to do the right thing and please people, and that's a nice impulse. But also, you can be a little bit more bold than you think you can.
Really good advice. We have been speaking with Hannah Elliott. She is the reporter covering automobiles for Bloomberg. If you enjoy this conversation, well, be sure and check out any of the 400 prior ones we've done. You can find those at iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your favorite podcasts. We love your comments, feedback, and suggestions. Write to us at mibpodcast@bloomberg.net. Sign up for my daily reading list at ritholtz.com. Check out my Twitter feed at ritholtz. I would be remiss if I did not thank the crack staff that helps put these conversations together. My audio engineer is Jack Halstead. My project manager is Atika Valbrun. Sean Russo is our head of research. Paris Wald is my producer. I'm Barry Ritholtz. You've been listening to Masters in Business on Bloomberg Radio.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not and, as simple you know, as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal wherever you get your podcasts.
And watch on Bloomberg Originals, Bloomberg Television, or BTV+.